Bildungsfenster. Für alle, die es gern wissen möchten.
Welcome to our podcast and to the very first episode in English. Today we are going to talk about robots and artificial intelligence in learning scenarios. So stay tuned if you want to know what the future of learning could look like. My name is Lena Wiesler and sitting across from me in our studio is Professor Dr. Tina Hassan. Welcome to our podcast.
Hello, thank you for inviting me.
In 2014, Tina Hassan graduated from our university, Hochschule Bonn-Rhein-Sieg, in a Master of Science course in Autonomous Systems. This year, we are happy to have her back at the university as Professor of Computer Science with specialization in Mathematical Foundations of Autonomous Systems. Professor Hassan, what is it like to return to Hochschule Bonn-Rhein-Sieg? Has anything changed?
Well, it feels great to be back here. I feel like life has come a full cycle. So the inevitable part of such a journey is that when you come back to the place where you started, then you can see how the journey has changed you. Mm-hmm. And I think that has been the most revealing part for me personally. And talking about external things that has changed, I think what struck me most was the change in the library. Mm-hmm. So I think it looks awesome and more appealing now. And I already did two of my lectures in the library.
Oh,
and,
that's great.
Yes, more my students and I, we really enjoyed those sessions.
Yeah, I mean, also the corona pandemic has really given a boost to digitization in our university. What would you say are the biggest benefits of digital education? Because that's what we're going to talk about today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe that by digital education, you're referring to the use of digital tools. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the benefits would depend on which tools we use and for what purpose we use them. So I think the collaboration tools, for example, can enhance participation and interaction during lectures, both in presence as well as online. Mm-hmm. And I have used these tools quite a lot and mm-hmm. successfully. And what I feel is that these give a certain amount of anonymity to the mm-hmm. students, and they feel more safe and secure, yeah, mm-hmm. to share their opinion. So the socio-evaluative threat component is taken away and yeah, so they feel less stressed and participate more. And yeah, so I think e-learning platforms definitely have been around for a while and they help in learning anywhere, anytime. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big benefit that I see compared to how things were several years ago. And I think coming to robotics specifically, I think digital technologies can make teaching easier, more effective, and also more sustainable. Mm-hmm. So when I teach courses on human-robot interaction, I use digital simulations very often so that students can get a feel of how complex models and agent architectures function. And these simulations can be combined with interactive Python notebooks, for example, and they make teaching and learning more hands-on mm-hmm. without the need for additional expensive hardware. So I think that's an advantage.
All right. You already said you're teaching in robotics. Can you tell us a little more about your research focus?
Yes, my research focuses on understanding human behavior mm-hmm. Using artificial intelligence methods and in using such models to make robots more social. Mm-hmm. And I also look at the interaction between humans and robots and how can we empirically evaluate them to understand the impact of robotic technologies on humans.
Mm-hmm. That sounds very interesting. What would you say, how can emotion recognition technology be used in teaching learning scenarios?
Yeah, I do think it has potential, but it's also a very sensitive topic, mm-hmm. especially due to the privacy concerns associated with it. But I think from a practical point of view, one of the beneficial ways to use emotion recognition technology would be to personalize learning mm-hmm. experiences, yeah, according to the level of engagement and cognitive load of the pupil. That is in an individual setting. So a student learning on their own at home with the help of a PC or a tablet mm-hmm. or even a robot in the future. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so how can we see how engaged the student is and how can we adapt the pace of learning, the complexity of the tasks, etc., to the needs of the individual student. So in this setting, the advantage I see is that the technology for analyzing emotions provides a feedback channel to the system. Mm-hmm. So if there were a human teacher present, we can read the faces and nonverbal signals, and we then adapt the teaching to the specific student. So this is not possible when students learn alone. So mm-hmm. Such technology can bring in this personalization of mm-hmm. learning. This is an individual setting, but there is also potential to use it in group settings to monitor the overall engagement level of a class. Especially in online sessions, so where the nonverbal feedback channel is completely missing. So when mm-hmm. I used to conduct sessions online, I was not able to really know whether my students are following me. Do they have questions? Are they just hesitant to ask?
That sounds familiar.
Yes. So I think that really affected the quality of teaching and also the level of satisfaction I had mm-hmm. after a session. Yeah. So I think in such group settings also we can apply such technology, but then we need to of course consider the ethical aspects very thoroughly and implement rigorous measures to eliminate them or mitigate them. Mm-hmm.
You said also the combination of robots and emotion recognition would be a possibility, probably also to make it more intuitive or easy or natural to work with robots. What would you say is the role of robots in digital education, if they even already play a role today?
Yeah, robots are being explored right now in the context of digital education. So mainly the goal is to use them as a tutor to mm-hmm. motivate children, for example, to learn new words in a foreign language or to solve simple mathematical problems. So here, the contrast between robots and, let's say, a PC or a tablet is that mm-hmm. robots have a physical body and they can act in the physical world. And in most situations, we go for humanoid robots that look at least abstractly like a human so mm-hmm. that the social interaction channel is available. So So in this is the common path that is explored in research. So the role of robots as a tutor and combining it with emotion recognition technology mm-hmm. to personalize the learning to the needs of the child. Now, I say child because most of these work in educational robots have been conducted in schools mm-hmm. and preschool scenarios. Nowadays, researchers are also coming up with new, interesting ideas. For example, recently I came across a research that looked at whether robots might help to develop delayed gratification in children. That is, can they motivate children to prefer a delayed reward than an immediate reward? Mm-hmm. And there is research that says children who can wait for a delayed reward go on in later life to be more academically successful.
Mm-hmm.
So now there were some experiments in that direction to see if robots can enhance this ability in children. And I also found research that looks at using mini drones to mm-hmm. teach dancing moves to students remotely. So the teacher is elsewhere and then controls robots, and yeah, they check whether the movements are right and so on. So yeah, I think these are interesting. And in robotics, robots are themselves the object of study. So mm-hmm. Like in our Master of Science program in Autonomous Systems, where I'm a professor. So here we need robots to help students learn different concepts and experiment with them.
What would you say are like the main advantages robots offer compared to traditional teaching methods? From what you just said, I heard motivation, mm-hmm. individualization.
Yes.
Maybe also being flexible from time or space.
Yeah, I mean, of course, individualization, motivation is, are advantages of using robots. Yeah, flexibility in space and time, it depends on how heavy the robot is, I think, whether you can easily carry them and transport them from place to place. Another argument that is often used in favor of robots is that they can repeat tasks without getting tired or frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in addition, this social appearance and the limited expressive capabilities make them less sophisticated than humans and more predictable. And this is especially advantageous for therapeutic interventions
mm-hmm.
To impart social, cognitive, and behavioral skills.
Mm-hmm.
So we often read about humanoid robots being used in autism research. So we mm-hmm. also have a project running at our institute for AI and autonomous systems. Here at the Hochschule, it's called the MIGRAVE project.
Mm-hmm.
And there we looked at how humanoids can be used to impart some of these socio-cognitive or behavioral skills to autistic children.
Mm-hmm. That sounds interesting.
Speaking about examples of robots being deployed in the real world, I wanted to mention two of them. One is in the US. So the Personal Robots Group at the MIT Media Labs developed robots with personalized storytelling capabilities. And these have been deployed in schools to help children from less privileged neighborhoods to acquire different skills, such as linguistic or social or communication skills that children from privileged neighborhoods might already have. So this is done with the intention of helping to bridge the differences in the competencies of students.
Mm-hmm.
Another very interesting application that I recently came across is that robots are now being introduced as part of teacher training programs in Germany. So I read about this happening in Bielefeld. And here the idea is to and impart digital competencies to the teachers of the future. Mm-hmm. So they can experiment with the robot, they can program them through apps and understand how it works, and also identify different teaching learning scenarios where robots can be deployed. And I think this is a positive development. I was very excited to read about this because I think when teachers understand the potential and risks of robots, then it gives us the opportunity to work with them to identify more successful and useful use cases.
Mm-hmm.
And this could enhance the success of educational robots. So we don't just do things because they might help, but we have more evidence-based approaches to developing robotic solutions. So I really found this very nice.
Yeah, it sounds interesting.
I hope someday we get to work with those teachers to develop something like this.
Yeah. I think the combination of robots and generative AI will also lead to robots that feel very human-like. Do you think by humanizing machines and also programs, do we have too much confidence in their results or what they're telling us?
Humanizing is a big term. I think we do have robots with human-like appearance, but mm-hmm. we don't have robots with human-like conscience.
Mm-hmm.
So we as humans naturally have a tendency to anthropomorphize machines, even those that do not look like humans. So that's why we attribute personalities to even washing machines mm-hmm. and microwave ovens.
When they seem to have a face.
Yes, especially when they have a face. Yeah. Yes. So this is more likely to happen with humanoid robots, and this can be good and bad at the same time. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, it makes robots more social and acceptable, but on the other hand, it could also create unrealistic expectations, which mm-hmm. can lead to boredom and rejection of the technology. So the focus so far has been on creating not exact replicas of humans, but more abstract forms, and not adult size, but rather child size robots for educational context, so that the expectations are also somehow regulated mm-hmm. through the appearance. And I think public opinion and expectations are influenced to a large extent by what we see in science fiction movies. However, the researchers and developers are aware of the limitations of their systems, and I think what we need is a better communication
mm-hmm.
between experts and the public. So the AI is not perfect and they make mistakes,
mm-hmm.
and this has to be communicated so that we don't have a wrong perception that machines never make mistakes and they're always perfect and do what they're supposed to do. It's not the case, especially with AI. And we need to communicate this, and so dialogue between scientists and public is essential.
Yeah. Are there any other ethical considerations that are important when it comes to using robots in educational environments?
I think privacy mm-hmm. is and personal data protection is a very big topic when it comes to using any robot with a human. And in educational environments, it's even more sensitive because there may be students who are underage and mm-hmm. maybe do not have the legal rights to offer consent and so on. So we have to be careful. We have to also take into account the diversity mm-hmm. of not just expression, but also the ethnic background from which the students come. And we need to make sure that the system is fair fair on several of these diversity dimensions and is able to adapt to social norms.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to also look at how much autonomy we want the robot to have and what is the role of the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So this needs careful consideration, and we have to also determine well ahead what type of data we want to gather. So if we look at the GDPR, it advocates the principle of data minimization. And how can we stick to this principle while also making sure that the diversity of expression in the cohort is
mm-hmm.
also addressed? So that's a difficult question.
All right, with that, we are coming to the end of our interview. I would like to know from you a little more generally, what do you think, which technological innovation will most impact our university in the future? Is it going to be robots?
I don't think it's going to be robots, because I think it might take some more time.
Mm-hmm.
It together, because robot is not just software, it's also hardware.
Yeah.
And so that adds another dimension mm-hmm. to the problem. So what I see as being relevant for the immediate future are generative AI, especially natural language processing technologies. I think they are already having an impact, and it's set to rise in the future. This can also enhance the potential of educational robots. But that's something we have to definitely look at. So how can we use these technologies to improve teaching and learning at the university? So I can imagine that NLP technologies can be used to improve teaching. So maybe we can even create innovative teaching learning mm-hmm. materials. We can use it for electronic assessments, to automate the grading of exams. So we have a project ongoing in this field. It was started by Professor Paul Pluger, and it is now being pursued by my colleague Jan Hees and Tim Metzler. It's the E2X project, where they look at the potential of using NLP to automatically grade even open-ended questions.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is one aspect. Another thing that I find is very important is how can we use AI and robotics technology to help students manage their exam anxieties or test mm-hmm. anxieties? So maybe we could think of setting up small cabins in the library or elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the system can then monitor the stress levels, give mm-hmm. feedback to the student, and help them overcome the test anxiety. So maybe that's something we could look at. So this can also be done with a virtual agent, I think. It mm-hmm. doesn't have to be a physical robot.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. Thinking of students, which competencies do you think will be relevant at the university of the future?
I think we must try to impart certain basic competencies in artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
It's here to stay, and we all have to use it in the future. So I think some basic understanding of how these work is important. Not only to understand their potential, but also to identify the risks
mm-hmm.
and to be able to use them ethically, responsibly, and correctly. Yeah, so I think that is one thing that I would like to see being promoted more at the university.
Well, then I hope that's going to happen. Thank you very much. And with this outlook on the future, we are at the end of this episode. Thank you, Tina Hassan, for giving us a glimpse into your field of research and into the future.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I was very glad to be here.
Thank you. And thank you to our listeners. And goodbye.
Goodbye.